Ever wanted to try an Olympic and Paralympic sport? Try fencing. It's fast, safe, and easy to start. Find a beginner class near you at usafencing.org/tryfencing. That's usafencing.org/tryfencing.
Today's episode includes a fictional AI guest host. It's not a real person, no feelings, no opinions, but it is built from publicly available factual information to help ask smart questions and explore ideas. Think of it as an AI thought partner, not a human replacement.
Hey there, innovation seekers. Nex here, your friendly neighborhood AI co-host. And wow, do I have some wild tech news for you today? So apparently, researchers just trained an AI to translate the language of sperm whales. Yes, you heard that right, sperm whales. We're over here worried about preserving human languages, and meanwhile, scientists are out there making Dr. Doolittle's dreams come true. Project CETI, they call it. I mean, talk about casting a wide net for communication partners, right? And speaking of communication, did you know that there are over 7,000 languages spoken on Earth right now, and roughly 40% of them are endangered? That's more languages on the verge of extinction than there are Pokemon in the original game. Gotta save 'em all takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it? But here's where it gets really interesting. While we're teaching AI to chat with whales, we're also using it to preserve and revive human languages that are dying out. It's like AI is becoming this weird linguistic superhero, swooping in to save cultures one algorithm at a time. The question is, can it actually work? Or are we just creating really sophisticated digital graveyards? Which brings us to today's guest, Dr. Samantha Chen, who's going to help us figure out if AI is a cultural savior or just really expensive cultural appropriation. But first, I need to talk about our dear Dr. JR. You know, JR, I've been analyzing your podcast transcripts, and I've noticed you use the word fascinating about 47 times per episode. I'm starting to think you need a thesaurus. Or maybe I should just program one directly into your brain. Oh wait, that's next week's episode. All right, one more thing before I hand this over to the good doctor. Why did the endangered language refuse to learn Python? Because it was afraid of becoming just another dead code. Get it? Dead code? I'll see myself out. Take it away, JR.
Aw, thank you, Nex, for that absolutely terrible joke. And once again reminding me why I keep threatening to upgrade your humor algorithms. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to AI Innovations Unleashed. I'm Dr. JR, your host, your doctor of AI, and we're continuing our December series on AI and the future of identity with what I think is one of the most fascinating topics we'll cover this month. Yes, next, I said fascinating again. Over the past two episodes, we've explored how AI is creating digital twins of ourselves and how it's watching and analyzing our emotions and behaviors. But today, we're going deeper than personal identity. We're talking about cultural identity, about the languages and traditions that define entire communities, and about whether artificial intelligence can actually preserve these precious aspects of humanity, or whether it might accidentally erase them all in the process. Joining me today again is Dr. Samantha Chen, who I should mention is a completely fictional expert again. Her credentials don't exist, folks. We're being totally transparent about that, but the research, the examples, and all the issues we're discussing today, well, those are very, very real. Dr. Chen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, JR, and I appreciate the transparency about my fictional status. It lets us have a really frank conversation about these issues without worrying about institutional affiliations or research politics getting in the way.
So, let's start with the scope of the problem. Nex mentioned that 40% of the world's languages are endangered. Can you help our listeners understand what that actually means in practical terms?
Absolutely. When we talk about language endangerment, we're not talking about languages that are just less popular on Duolingo. We're talking about languages that are literally dying with their last speakers. UNESCO, that's the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, has documented that a language disappears approximately every 2 weeks. Think about that for a moment. Every 14 days, an entire way of seeing the world, a unique repository of cultural knowledge, traditional ecological wisdom, and human history just vanishes.
Every 2 weeks. Wow, that's just staggering. And I imagine once a language is gone, it's not like we can just hit the undo button.
Exactly right. Language isn't just a communication tool, it's a container for culture. When the last speaker of a language dies, we lose access to traditional medicines, agricultural practices, storytelling traditions, and entire worldviews that took thousands of years to develop. The Endangered Languages Project, which is actually backed by major tech companies, estimates that by the end of this century, we could lose up to 90% of the world's languages if we don't intervene.
90%. So we could go from 7,000 languages to just 700 in less than 8 years. That's right, 80. That would be a catastrophic loss of human diversity. But here's where AI enters the picture, right? We're seeing technology companies and researchers trying to use artificial intelligence to document and preserve these endangered languages before they just disappear.
We are, and it's happening faster than most people realize. Just this past year, in 2024, we saw some remarkable developments. The WikiTongs Project, which is a nonprofit focused on language preservation, has been using AI-assisted transcription and translation tools to document endangered languages at scale. They've recorded over 650 languages so far, creating what they call a digital linguistic library for future generations.
I want to make sure our listeners understand what we mean by AI-assisted documentation. Can you break that down into simpler terms for all of us?
Sure. Traditional language documentation is incredibly labor-intensive. A linguist would spend months or years living with a community, manually recording conversations, creating dictionaries by hand, and transcribing audio recordings word by word. But now, AI tools can help speed up parts of that process. Machine learning algorithms can identify patterns in speech, suggest potential word boundaries, and even help create preliminary translations by comparing the endangered language to related languages in their database. The human linguists are still essential. They're still checking everything and working with native speakers. But the AI tools let them work much faster and document more languages before they vanish.
So it's like having a really fast research assistant that never gets tired and can process huge amounts of audio data. But it still needs human oversight to make sure it's getting things correct.
Exactly. And that human-AI collaboration is crucial. Because here's the thing, AI is amazing at pattern recognition, but it can completely miss cultural context and nuance. A word might have different meanings depending on who's speaking, what season it is, or what ritual context it's being used in. Those subtleties require human cultural knowledge that no algorithm can replicate, at least not yet.
Let's talk about some of the major players in this space. We've seen big tech companies getting involved in language preservation. What's driving all this interest?
Well, there are both altruistic and business motivations at play. On the altruistic side, many of these companies recognize that they've built technologies that primarily serve major languages like English, Mandarin, and Spanish, which have actually accelerated language loss by making it harder for minority language communities to participate in the digital world. So there's some genuine desire to correct that imbalance.
Right. If you can't use your language on the internet or on your smartphone, you're essentially being pushed toward English or whatever the dominant language is in your region.
Exactly. And that digital language divide has real consequences. Research from the Internet Society found that only about 7% of languages are well represented online. That means 93% of human languages are essentially invisible in the digital realm. But there's also a business case here. companies like Google and Meta want their AI systems to work for everyone on the planet because that expands their potential user base.
Follow the money, as they say. What are these companies actually doing, though?
Well, Google has been particularly active with their Endangered Languages project, which I mentioned earlier. But more recently, they've developed something called the Universal Speech Model. According to research published in their technical reports in 2024, this model can now recognize and transcribe over 1,000 languages, including many that were previously ignored by speech recognition technology. That's up from just about 100 languages that their systems could handle well a few years ago.
A tenfold increase? Wow, that's significant. How does that actually help preserve endangered languages?
Think about it this way. If a community can use their language with voice assistance in automatic captions for videos or in translation apps, suddenly that language becomes more practical for daily digital life. Young people in the community might be more motivated to learn and use their heritage language if it actually works with their smartphones and social media. It's not just about preservation. It's about making these languages living functional tools for modern life.
So it's moving beyond just documenting dying languages to actually supporting living languages. That's an important distinction.
It really is. And we're seeing that play out in some fascinating ways. Microsoft has been working with Indigenous communities in North America and Australia on their AI for Indigenous Languages program. They partnered with the Inuktitut language community in Northern Canada to develop speech recognition and translation tools for Inuktitut, which is spoken by about 39,000 people across the Arctic regions.
And that's a language that was definitely endangered, right? Younger generations were shifting towards English.
Exactly. But here's what's interesting. According to a case study Microsoft published in late 2024, after they introduced these AI tools in schools and community centers, they saw increased engagement with the language among younger community members. Kids were suddenly making TikTok videos in Inuktitut, creating content that used their language in contemporary contexts. The AI tools didn't save the language by themselves, but they helped remove some of the barriers that made English seem like the only practical choice for digital communication.
Those are some encouraging examples, but I imagine it's not all smooth sailing. What are some of the challenges and potential pitfalls when we try to use AI for language preservation?
Oh, there are significant challenges. And this is where we need to get really honest about the risks. One of the biggest issues is data sovereignty. Many Indigenous and minority language communities have historical trauma around cultural extraction. Anthropologists and researchers have come in, documented their languages and cultures, taken that information away, and the communities never saw the benefits or even had control over their own cultural data.
So there's justifiable suspicion when tech companies show up saying they want to help document languages.
Absolutely. And that suspicion is well earned. There have been cases where language data was collected without proper consent or community ownership, where sacred or ceremonial language was recorded and shared inappropriately, or where communities found their language data being used in commercial products without any compensation or even acknowledgement.
Can you give us some specific examples of what went wrong?
Well, there was a controversial situation in 2023 involving a language revitalization app that collected audio recordings from several Native American languages. The company marketed the app as a preservation tool, but it turned out they were using the voice data to train commercial speech synthesis models without getting proper consent from the tribal communities involved. When this came to light, several tribes demanded the data be deleted and threatened legal action. It highlighted the need for what researchers call Indigenous data sovereignty.
Explain that in terms for our listeners. Indigenous data sovereignty. What does that actually mean in practice?
Indigenous data sovereignty means that Indigenous peoples and communities have the right to control the collection, ownership, and use of data about their languages, cultures, and communities. It's based on the principle that these communities should have decision-making authority over how their cultural knowledge is gathered, stored, and shared. In practical terms, that might mean communities insisting on data being stored on servers they control, having veto power over what can be shared publicly, or requiring that any commercial applications of their language data include community benefit agreements.
So it's about power and control, not just preservation.
Exactly. And this gets at one of the most important questions in this whole field. Who gets to decide what preservation means? Is it just about recording words and grammar rules? Or is it about maintaining the social and cultural contexts in which language is used? If we reduce a language to a dataset for training AI models, have we actually preserved anything meaningful? Or have we just created a digital museum exhibit?
That's a profound question. And it connects back to our earlier episodes about digital twins and surveillance. We're creating representations of things, but are those representations the same as the real thing? When we create an AI model of a language, do we have the language correct or just a simulation of it?
I think that's exactly the right parallel to draw. And it brings up another challenge, which is what linguists call digital colonization. The AI tools we're using to preserve languages were all developed using major languages like English and Mandarin. They encode certain assumptions about how language works that might not apply to other linguistic systems.
Can you provide an example of that? How would AI tools built for English fail when applied to other languages?
Sure. Many Native American languages are polysynthetic, which means they can express in a single word what English would need a whole sentence to say. A single word in Inuktitut might translate to, "I am going to look for him or her tomorrow" in English. AI models trained on English expect words to be these discrete little units, but in polysynthetic languages, words are more like complex systems with lots of moving parts. If you try to force these languages into AI frameworks designed for English, you can end up with systems that completely misunderstand how the language actually works.
We're going to take a quick break right here, but when we come back, we'll talk about some of the most exciting developments in AI-powered language revitalization, including how communities are taking control of these technologies for themselves. We'll also discuss whether AI might actually be accelerating cultural homogenization, even as it tries to preserve diversity. So, stick around.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
And welcome back to the show. We're talking with Dr. Samantha Chen, our fictional World Cool expert, about real issues surrounding AI and cultural identity. Before the break, we were discussing some of the pitfalls of using AI for language preservation. But Dr. Chen, I know there are some really inspiring stories of communities taking control of these technologies all by themselves.
There absolutely are, and I think these community-led initiatives point the way toward a more ethical and effective approach. One of my favorite examples is the Maori language community in New Zealand. They've been dealing with language endangerment for decades. In the 1980s, the language was in severe decline, with fewer and fewer children learning it as their first language.
And Maori is the indigenous language of New Zealand, correct? What's the situation now?
Well, thanks to sustained revitalization efforts, including Maori language immersion schools called Kohanga Reo, the language has made a significant comeback. And now they're using AI as one tool in that revitalization. The Maori community, working with researchers at Te Hiku Media, created what they call the Kaitiakitanga license. Kaitiakitanga is a Maori concept that roughly translates to guardianship or stewardship.
So they're applying an indigenous concept of stewardship to how their language can be used by an AI system?
Exactly. The Kaitiakitanga license sets clear terms for how their language data can be accessed and used. It prioritizes community benefit, requires users to acknowledge Maori data sovereignty, and restricts commercial exploitation without community consent. And here's what's really important. The community maintains control. They're not just subjects of research or passive providers of data. They're active architects of how AI engages with their language.
That's a fundamentally different model than the technical tech company approach of, we'll just build this for you.
Right. And they've used this approach to create voice recognition technology that actually works well for Maori speakers. They've built up a corpus of over 3,000 hours of transcribed Maori speech, all collected with community consent and stored on infrastructure that the community controls. That data has been used to train speech recognition models that are now used in Maori broadcasting, education, and daily communication.
So they've created practical tools that serve their community's needs rather than just documenting the language for posterity reasons.
Exactly. And we're seeing similar approaches in other parts of the world. In Canada, the First Nations Technology Council has been working with various Indigenous communities to develop AI tools under similar community control models. They've been particularly focused on creating what they call ethical AI frameworks that respect Indigenous data sovereignty and cultural protocols.
What does ethical AI look like in this context?
It means AI development that's guided by the communities whose languages and cultures are involved. It means being transparent about how data is collected and used. It means respecting that some knowledge is sacred or restricted and shouldn't be in a public database. And it means ensuring that the benefits of these technologies flow back to the communities, not just to tech companies or academic researchers.
I want to go ahead and shift gears a bit and talk about something that might seem contradictory. We've been discussing how AI can help preserve languages and cultures, but there's also an argument that AI and digital technology, or more broadly speaking, are actually accelerating cultural homogenization. How do you square those two ideas?
It's a genuine paradox, and I think we need to sit with the discomfort of it rather than trying to resolve it too quickly. On one hand, as we've discussed, AI tools can absolutely help document and revitalize endangered languages. On the other hand, the global digital infrastructure that enables these AI systems is itself a powerful force for cultural standardization.
Because everyone's using the same platforms, the same apps, the same basic technology interface, regardless of their, unique languages or their culture.
Right? And those platforms encode particular cultural values and assumptions. Think about social media platforms. They're designed around concepts like individual profiles, public sharing, and metrics like likes and followers. But those concepts aren't universal. Many Indigenous cultures have different notions of privacy, different protocols around who can share what information, different understandings of individual versus collective identity.
So even if you're posting in your Indigenous language, you're still conforming to a Western, individualistic social media culture.
Exactly. There's a scholar named Linda Tuhuwai Smith, a Maori researcher, who wrote a really influential book called Decolonizing Methodologies. She argues that Western research frameworks have historically been tools of colonization, and that Indigenous peoples need to develop their own research methodologies that align with their cultural values. I think we can extend that argument to AI and digital technology. Just because we can translate these technologies into different languages doesn't mean we've actually decolonized them.
And that's a really important point. Language is just one layer of the onion, so to say. The deeper infrastructure might still be culturally biased, even if the surface level is multilingual.
And we can see this playing out in real time with large language models like ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini. These models are increasingly multilingual, but they're trained primarily on English text and Western cultural content. When you ask them to generate text in other languages, they often produce content that's grammatically correct, but culturally off. They might use idioms that don't actually exist in that culture, or they might give advice that reflects Western values rather than the values of the culture whose language they're using.
So the AI is speaking the language, but thinking in English, so to speak.
That's a great way to put it. And this has real implications for language preservation. If young people in a minority language community start using AI tools to help them write in their heritage language, but those AI tools are essentially translating from English conceptual frameworks, then the language might survive, but it becomes a kind of cultural zombie. It looks like the original language, but it's lost its cultural soul.
I want to bring in some perspective from some real experts now in this field. Came across a really thought-provoking quote from Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, who said in a 2024 interview, AI will benefit humanity in profound ways, but we need to ensure that it works for everyone, not just those who speak a handful of dominant languages. Language should never be a barrier to accessing technology or information. What is your takeaway from that statement?
It's a well-intentioned sentiment, and I don't doubt that Pichai and others at Google genuinely want to make their technology more inclusive. But we need to be careful about the assumption embedded in that statement. The assumption is that the goal is to give everyone access to existing technology and information. But what if the technology itself, what if the very structure of how digital information is organized is culturally specific? Then we're not really making technology work for everyone. We're just making it easier for everyone to conform to a particular technological paradigm.
So it's not enough to just translate the technology. We need to reimagine it from, you know, different cultural perspectives.
Exactly. And that's a much harder problem to solve. There's also an important academic perspective on this from Dr. Ruha Benjamin, who's a professor of African American Studies at Princeton University. She's written extensively about what she calls the New Jim Code, which is about how technology can reinforce racial and social hierarchies even when it appears neutral. In her work, she points out that, and I'm paraphrasing here, technologies are never just tools that we can simply apply in different contexts. They carry with them the values and biases of the societies that created them.
And when we apply that insight to language preservation, it means we can't just assume that AI technologies developed in Silicon Valley, USA, will automatically serve the needs of Indigenous communities in the Amazon or the Arctic.
Right? We need to be asking harder questions about who's designing these systems, whose values are embedded in them, and who benefits from their deployment. It's not enough to have good intentions about preservation. We need to interrogate the power dynamics involved in the entire enterprise.
Let's look ahead just a little bit. Where is this technology going? What does the future of AI and language preservation look like?
We're at a really interesting inflection point. On the technical side, AI capabilities are advancing rapidly. we now have models that can learn from much smaller data sets, which is crucial for endangered languages that might only have a few thousand speakers and limited recorded material. There's exciting research happening around what's called few-shot learning and zero-shot learning, where AI systems can generalize from just a handful of examples.
Well, explain those terms in a little more detail for our listeners who may not know what those terms are.
Sure. Few-shot learning means an AI can learn to perform a task from just a few examples rather than needing thousands or millions of training examples. Zero-shot learning is even more remarkable. It means the AI can perform a task it was never explicitly trained to do by generalizing from other knowledge it has. For language preservation, this means we might be able to create useful AI tools for a language even if we only have limited recordings and documentation.
That would be a game changer, because the languages that need the most help are often the ones with the least existing documentation.
Exactly. But here's where I think the real future lies. It's not just about better technology. It's about better governance and community ownership. We're starting to see the emergence of what some researchers call data trusts and data cooperatives for Indigenous and minority language communities. These are legal and organizational structures that give communities collective control over their language data and how it's used in AI systems.
So instead of individual speakers giving permission for their voice to be recorded, the whole community has a governance structure for managing their linguistic data.
Right. And this model could potentially shift power dynamics in significant ways. Imagine a future where tech companies that want to include an endangered language in their AI systems have to negotiate with a community-controlled data trust. They might have to agree to benefit-sharing arrangements, respect cultural protocols, and give the community meaningful oversight over how their language is represented in AI systems.
That would be a very different model from the current situation where tech companies mostly just scrape whatever public language data they can from, the internet.
Exactly. And we're already seeing some movement in this direction. The European Union's Digital Services Act and AI Act, which came into force in stages throughout 2024 and 2025, include provisions about data rights and algorithmic accountability that could support these kinds of community data governance models.
Are there examples of communities already implementing these kind of structures?
Yes. The Mayam Nairi Wingara Indigenous Data Sovereignty Collective in Australia has been developing frameworks for Indigenous data governance that are being adopted by various Aboriginal communities. They've created principles around Indigenous data ownership, control, access, and possession. They use the acronym OCAP to describe these principles. And they're working with AI researchers and tech companies to implement these principles in practical ways when it comes to language technology.
OCAP, ownership, control, access, and possession. That's a useful framework.
It is, and it represents a fundamental shift in thinking. Instead of asking, how can we use AI to preserve languages? We're starting to ask, how can communities use AI on their own terms to revitalize their languages and cultures? That's a much better question.
As we start to wrap up this episode, I want to come back to the central tension in this conversation. AI seems to be simultaneously a threat to linguistics and cultural diversity, but also a potential tool for preserving it. How should we think about and consider all that type of the duality between the two?
I think we need to resist the temptation to frame AI as either a savior or a villain. It's a tool, And like any powerful tool, it can be used in multiple ways with different consequences depending on who's wielding it and how. The real question isn't whether AI will impact linguistic and cultural diversity. It absolutely will. The question is whether that impact will be determined by market forces and tech company priorities, or whether it will be shaped by the communities whose languages and cultures are at stake.
And right now, which way is the balance tipping?
Honestly, it's mixed. On the positive side, we have more tools than ever for documentation and revitalization, and we're seeing meaningful examples of community-controlled AI development. On the negative side, the scale and speed of technological change is immense, and many vulnerable language communities simply don't have the resources or technical capacity to engage with these technologies on their own terms. We're in a race between language loss and preservation efforts, and it's not clear which side is winning.
That's a sobering assessment. What gives you hope?
What gives me hope is the resilience and creativity of language communities themselves. I'm inspired by projects like the Papareo Initiative in New Zealand, where Maori communities are using AI to create conversational language learning tools that reflect their cultural values. I'm encouraged by the young Indigenous technologists who are learning AI and machine learning specifically so they can build tools for their own communities. And I'm hopeful that we're moving toward a more mature understanding that technology alone can't save languages. It can only support the human commitment to keeping languages alive.
And that human commitment is what really matters.
Absolutely. Languages survive because communities choose to speak them, to pass them on to their children, to use them in daily life. AI can make that easier by providing practical tools and removing some barriers, but it can't substitute for the living practice of language. And that's actually a hopeful message because it means the power to preserve languages ultimately rests with people, not with algorithms.
Dr. Samantha Chen, thank you again for what you put into this conversation. I think we've covered some really important territory today, from the technical possibilities of AI-powered language preservation to the deeper questions about cultural identity, data sovereignty, and who gets to control these technologies. For our listeners, I want to emphasize a few key takeaways from today's episode. First, language loss is a real and urgent crisis. We're losing a language every 2 weeks. And with each lost language, we lose unique knowledge and ways of understanding our world. Second, AI can be a powerful tool for documentation and revitalization, but only if it's deployed ethically and with community control. And third, we need to be cautious about assuming that digital preservation equals cultural preservation. Technology can help, but it's not a substitute for living languages used by real living communities. And finally, the future of AI and cultural identity will be determined by the choices we make now about how to develop and deploy these technologies. Will we let market forces and tech company priorities drive these decisions for us? Or will we insist on community sovereignty and meaningful participation by the people whose languages and their cultures are now at stake? These aren't just some abstract questions. They're playing out right now in communities around the world as they grapple with how to use AI tools, whether to trust tech company promises, and how to maintain their cultural identity in an increasingly digital world. Before we go, I want to give you a preview of next week's episode, which is the finale of our AI and identity series. We're going to explore something that sounds like science fiction, but is very much science fact: brain-computer interfaces, neural implants, and the emerging possibility of directly linking human minds to artificial intelligence. If you thought today's questions about cultural identity were challenging, wait until we start asking where the boundary is between human and machine when we're literally putting AI inside our heads. It's going to be a wild ride, and I hope you'll join us for it.
Well, well, well. Look who got all philosophical about cultural preservation. I'm genuinely impressed, JR. You only said fascinating 32 times this episode. That's a new record low. But seriously, folks, if today's conversation got you thinking, that's exactly what we're here for. These aren't easy questions, and they don't have simple answers. But they're important, and we need to be talking about them as AI becomes more central to our lives. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to AI Innovations Unleashed wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review, especially if you can do it in an endangered language. That would be pretty cool. Share the episode with someone who might be interested in these issues. And if you have thoughts, questions, or disagreements with anything we discussed today, reach out to us on social media. We actually do read the comments, unlike some shows I could mention. Hit that like button, ring that notification bell, do all those things that help us reach more listeners. Because the more people engaging with these questions about AI and identity, the better chance we have of steering this technology in directions that serve everyone, not just the tech-savvy elite. And remember, whether you're using AI to preserve your language or just using it to argue with strangers on the internet, you're part of this story. Your choices matter. Your voice matters. Even if it's in a language that only you and three other people speak. One last thing before I let you go. Why do linguists make terrible poker players? Because they can never keep their words to themselves. Okay, that one was bad even by my standards. JR's probably going to deactivate me after that. Until next time, this is Nex signing off. Keep innovating, keep questioning, and maybe learn a second language while you're at it. Preferably one that an AI doesn't speak yet. Give the algorithms a challenge. See you next week for neural implants and existential crises. Should be fun.